Well, good evening. My name is Christian. I am a person who's involved in just about everything here at Orb. And I want to say to those of you who are here for the first time, a few of you I've met, welcome. I'm glad you're here. To those of you who have come week after week, I'm also glad that you're here and that I have a chance to speak with you tonight. For the last few weeks and leading up until Easter, we've been simply dealing with the subject of what it means to believe that Jesus is alive. At the center of our faith as Christians is not just the event of Christmas, that God came in the form of this child and lived a real life, but is the moment of Easter, which is where as Christians we believe that although Jesus did in fact die, he rose again, and so we believe that he is alive. Now, let that thought sink into your mind for just a moment. We believe that a man who died rose again. And in that moment, his true nature was revealed, that Jesus was more than just a man, but was somehow God incarnate, and that when he came, and when he lived, and when he died, and then rose again, he demonstrated that, and he lives now. We believe this, that he's alive in this very moment, in a different way than you and I are alive, but no less real for that difference. And what we've been considering over these weeks and will consider up to Easter is, well, what does it mean that a person is alive? Well, a living person has hands and they do things with them. And so Matt spoke to us about what Jesus does with his hands. A living person has ears and they hear. Jared talked to us about what it means that Jesus is alive and continues to hear. Last week I spoke about Jesus' eyes, what it means that he sees and continues to see. Tonight, we're going to talk about the fact that Jesus speaks, that he says something and has something to say, and I will tell you right at the start, what he has to say matters. See if you agree with me here. Life is full of difficult choices. Does anyone agree with that? There are so many things that we have to decide about. Some of them are not hard. Whether I'll have 3 hot dogs with sauerkraut and mustard or a large barbecue cheesesteak for lunch. That's not that hard. And it's really not that hard because if I have the hot dogs tomorrow, Tuesday, cheesesteak. Not a hard decision. There are lots of those. But there are also many decisions which every one of us face, whether we're young or old, that can be really challenging. Let me say a few. Which friends should I spend my time with? Who should I trust? How should I use the money that I have? What classes should I take? What major should I choose? When I'm done with college, what do I do with my life? What job should I pursue? What career should I go after? Who should I be with? What relationship should I invest my time in? If I am going to get married, how do I decide when is the right time and who is the right person? How do I decide after I'm married where we'll live or whether we'll have children or how many children we'll have or what we should name our children or how we should discipline them or not or what activities they should get involved in? And then when my children begin to grow up, how do I continue to parent my children when they're adults or when do I retire or what do I do in my retirement? These are decisions that face people that are hard, are they not? I was thinking on this fact of life the other day in my office when I found myself imagining how great it would be if I could have a person whose job it was to tell me what to do. Anyone else ever fantasize about that? You have? Yeah. I thought that would be great. As long as this guy knew all the right answers, it would be awesome to have somebody whose job was to just make all those decisions for me. When I get to a crossroads and I don't know what to do, I can just ask him and it's his job to tell me. Come on, if you fantasized about that too, let me see some response here. Yeah, I'm not going to make you make sounds like Larissa did, okay? As I was thinking of this, I looked at my computer and I just on a whim, I decided to type in on the Google thing there, life coach. Guess what? Has anyone been to this website? Do you think lifecoach.com is a website?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
Lifecoach.com is the best place in the world to find the right coach to help you reach your biggest goals in life. Whether you are in a career transition, wish to find the ideal work, start your own business, break through the glass ceiling, write a book or a screenplay, transform your life, want to find the man or woman of your dreams, or make more money, we will help you find the best coach to do it. I'm totally serious. You can hire at Life Coach a person who will help you build financial reserve, buy a home, become more creative, design vision and purpose, discover your core values and your emotional needs, find passion in life, find the perfect life partner, get clients, get out of debt, get promoted, have more fun, become more creative and innovative, leave a legacy, balance your life, make more money, get a raise, recover from failure, retire early, stop bad habits, and even someone to help you do Highland assessments. I don't know what that last one is. Does anybody know what that is? For as little as $500 a month, you can hire a life coach. Now, if, by the way, just I got to give you this proviso. If it's for corporate needs, it's $500 an hour. But you can get a coach who promises to stand beside you in whatever goals you set to help you make the right decisions and know which direction to go and which choices to make at every step of the turn so you will be able to reach the goals in life that you want. Does that sound pretty inviting to you? I mean, to be honest, that sounds like a great promise, right? I am not a salesman for lifecoach.com. And I'm not a salesman for Jesus either, but I am someone who knows him. I'm a person who at one point in my life was thankful enough to be met by Jesus. And the truth is that he does in fact promise to come alongside us and to coach us through life. Now, I'll tell you what, I just felt my skin shiver because I feel very uneasy about comparing Jesus Christ to a life coach. Jesus is more than my or your personal coach. Okay? Jesus is the Messiah. Jesus is the King of Israel. He is the Son of God. Jesus is the Word of God incarnate. He is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. Jesus Christ is more than your personal coach. But the moment I say that, I have to add this also. He is more than a coach to help you know how to move through life, but he is not less than that. The truth is that when Jesus came, he came with something to say. Jesus came teaching. And what he had to teach was not just abstract ideas about some vague God or just some religious things that have nothing to do with life, but when Jesus came, he taught. And what he taught was how to live true life. He actually did that. Now, yes, he did more, but he did in fact teach how to live real life. Now, I want you to grab the Bible now, and I want you to open to the book of Matthew, and find the fifth chapter in Matthew. Now, if you've just now come in, you might not have heard Larissa share with the children, but she did a great job there, and I'm so grateful for her teaching of the children. But look at Matthew 5. It's on page 785 of the Bibles we put on your chairs. If you notice, just flipping one page back, that's where the book of Matthew begins. The New Testament opens with the book of Matthew. The book of Matthew tells about how Jesus was born. It talks about his relationship with a man named John the Baptist. He gets baptized. Jesus goes into the wilderness and he's instructed there by the Spirit and guided through a bit of struggles. And then he comes out of the wilderness and he gathers some disciples around him. And then the first major thing he does in the book of Matthew starts on chapter 5 there. Look at the beginning of chapter 5. Okay? Jesus had just now gathered some disciples around him. He had begun to teach a bit and became popular. And here's what happens in chapter 5. It says, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. And then he began to speak and taught them. Now I want to stop there, and I want you to just picture this. Jesus had come out of the wilderness and had gathered some followers around him. He began to teach a bit and to heal some folks, and he became very popular quickly. There were a lot of people around him. And then one day, he looked at the crowds and he saw the people who were interested in following him, the disciples. And he said to them, I want you to come with me. We're going to take a break away from all of these crowds, and we're going to go on a hike. And they began to follow him, of course, because they had some notion that this man had something good to teach them. And he led them up into the mountains. and the mountains in that region. I always thought that the Bible lands were just one big flat desert. Anybody else ever have that image of the place where Jesus lived? There's actually a very varied geography there. There are beautiful mountains. There's snow. It snowed in Jerusalem recently. Did anybody see that on the news? So it's like real world. Jesus takes these guys. They go up on this hike, and they get up to the top of the mountain. And Jesus sits down, and he starts to teach them. He starts to speak words into their ears. He teaches them about life. He talks to them about what it's like when you're fighting with someone who you know. And he tells them how they ought to deal with times when they're fighting with people in their family who they're close with. He teaches them about what it's like when an enemy hurts you and how you ought to respond to that. He talks to them about what goals they should really set before themselves in life. What are the things that really matter? He actually opens these subjects right before them with his mouth. He speaks about these things. He talks to them about relationships and how to make them work. He talks to them about things that are guaranteed to destroy relationships. He talks to them about what it means to pursue God and how to do it and how not to do it. He reminds them of the annoying people that they've seen who go and they show off with their religion. And he says, don't be like that. But then on the other hand, he teaches them, here's how to speak to God. And he goes on, and he teaches them about life and how to make it through this very complicated life that we find ourselves in. He teaches them how to follow the paths that he sets out to them. And it doesn't cost them $500 an hour. It's free. He just teaches them. Look at 5 there, right where I started, okay? Are you looking at it? Turn the page and look at all of those words on those two pages that you see right there. Turn the page again. All the words on the next page there, 788. All of this is what has been called the Sermon on the Mount. It's what Larissa talked about. All of this is Jesus' brilliant teaching to these men and women who followed him up the mountain, which is going to teach them how to live life. Now, I'm not going to talk about all those details, but I want you to listen to me now. I'm going to challenge you sometime tonight, tomorrow, this week, grab a Bible, open to Matthew 5, and slowly read from chapter 5 all the way through chapter 7. Read those words and take your time. I promise that what you'll find is teaching that connects to what your life is like. Some of the things in there are not going to connect with you. You're going to say, what is this about? I can't understand this. It's okay to skip over that stuff. But I promise you will find things there that are real, that connect with what you really experience, that challenge you. So Jesus is up there on the mountain for 3 chapters. I don't know how long it took him to teach, but I imagine it was all day at least. And when he got done, when he finished with all of this brilliant teaching, that's when he shared the image that Larissa talked about. And I want to read this with you, and we're going to spend a little time on it. Look at toward the end of chapter 7, verse 24. Now again, Jesus has just taught for hours and hours, and at the end of all of that teaching with all of those people there, here's what he says. Verse 24 reads like this. Everyone then who hears these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on rock. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall, because it had been founded on rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. Now the image that Jesus paints there for the at the end of all of his teaching for the disciples is fairly simple. I think it's simple enough that even little children can understand it. But in the midst of that image, there is such wisdom and insight and information that I believe is practical for us that I want to spend my time with you tonight just making some observations about that image that Jesus shares. And here's how it's going to work tonight. It's going to be simple. I'm going to share an observation and then talk about it for a bit with you and see what we can see and learn from it. Now, my hope, and Michael, where's Michael? Thank you for your prayer, Michael. Michael prayed about it, that when as I speak and as I share, that God himself, that Jesus, who is alive still, would speak to all of us. And so let's look at this image together and see what we see. First observation is this. How we respond to what Jesus says is up to us. Think about this for a moment. In the picture that Jesus paints, there are two homes. Both of them start out very similarly. On the outside, they look almost just the same, but they end up very differently. And the factor that contributes to the end of the home is whether the builder decided to listen to Jesus or not. In both cases, the builder had the option of either listening to what Jesus said and doing it, or not listening to him and not doing it. And that was the determining factor that changed the end. And so I say again, whether we listen to what Jesus says or not is up to us. Let me tell you why I think this is worth saying. Doesn't matter how much you pay for a coach. Doesn't matter if you decide to hire a coach that's $1,000 an hour or $1,000 a minute. There might even be a coach that's that expensive. Doesn't matter how much he costs. He's worthless unless you do what he tells you. That's pretty simple, isn't it? Let me show you what I mean. Michelle and I watched a movie recently, a documentary called The Heart of the Game. Anybody here see that? You saw that. It's a fantastic movie about basketball. There's a coach. His name is Coach Ressler. And he coaches girls basketball in a high school in Seattle. And the film opens up with him working with his team. And it unfolds through their first season. His first year with these students, Coach Ressler brings them from a nowhere team to the state finals. And do you know how they get there? It's not that they have a superstar player or that they have one or two people that just make all the points. It's simple. The coach tells them what to do and they listen to him. And it works because he's a good coach and because they choose to listen. The film gets to the point where they're at the state finals in Tacoma. The game is close because the team that they're playing against has taller players, way better players, and so the score is neck and neck right till the end. There's 4 seconds left on the clock when the opposing team scores a basket that brings the game to within 2 points. Coach Ressler's team is up by 2 points. They have the ball underneath their opponent's basket, and there's 4 seconds left on the clock. You got this? Coach calls timeout. He brings the girls together in a huddle. And they got the camera in there. This is a documentary. It's a real thing, okay? They've got the camera right in there. And the coach looks at the girls and he says this. We're 4 seconds away from state final championship. All we have to do is inbound the ball and hold on to it. Whatever you do, don't try to lob the ball and get it down the court. Just inbound it and hold on to it and we win. Got it? What do you think the girl said? Yes, got it. All right? Camera shows the girl underneath the basket with the ball. Whistle gets blown. She looks, there's a girl right here. Doesn't pass it to her. She looks, there's a girl on her team right here. Doesn't pass it to her. She goes, yeah, oh yeah. Ball's going down the court. You're watching this and you're like, is this really a documentary? You're watching this, it goes down. The other team jumps up, grabs the ball. Now it's like 3 seconds. She throws it back toward the basket. Girl with the wrong color shirt on grabs it right here, okay? There's the basket. She jumps. She lets the ball go. It's going up like this. The buzzer rings. Time's out, okay? The ball's going, and this is what the filmmaker does. Puts on the slow motion. Hoops here. The ball's going like this. Going like this. And you know what the filmmaker does? Goes black. Do you know those girls had the freedom either to listen to the coach or not. Doesn't matter how good the coach is, if you choose not to listen, the words are sort of meaningless. Now, this is very important for you all to hear. This is very important. God, the God that we read about in the Bible, do you know how this God has primarily chosen to make himself known to us? It's not by showing up with this sort of flashes of lightning and being visible to our eyes. There are occasions where something like God's visibility happens, but those are by far the exemption rather than the rule. God makes himself known to his people from the very beginning all the way to the end, not by what he looks like, but by what he says, by his words. And the way God has chosen to do it is that he says his word, and then he leaves it up to us how we respond. God has chosen not to make us into automatic robots. God has decided not to force us to follow him. But what he's done is he's very simply presented his way for us, and then he leaves it up to us whether we choose to follow. There's beautiful words in the Old Testament. They're something like this. Thus says the Lord, I am the one who teaches you for your own good. Be very careful to follow the path that the Lord shows for you, because if you do, it will be for your life and for your goodness. But if you choose not to follow, it will be bad for you. This is a theme all over the Old Testament, and it comes up again when Jesus teaches. And the first thing that I wanted you to see in this image is that when Jesus speaks, he leaves it up to us how we respond. All right. Second observation about this image of the two houses. The effects of choosing not to follow Jesus are not always immediately apparent. Now, in the story that I shared about Coach Wrestler and his team, it took about 4 seconds before you saw the ill effects of their choice not to listen to their coach. Of course, you were left hanging to wonder whether the ball went in or not. But you could see pretty quickly that they didn't listen and it was bad for them. But in the image that Jesus paints of the houses, did you notice that one house was built on rock and one house was built on sand, and it wasn't immediately true that one fell down and the other stayed up, was it? No. As long as the weather is good, you can't tell the difference between the two houses, because the difference is underground. It's not what you can see with your eyes, but it's what's beneath the house that makes a difference, and that doesn't even make a difference until the weather turns bad. So that whether the person listens or not to Jesus won't necessarily become apparent right away. Let me tell you specifically how we know this is true based on the things that Jesus teaches. Tell me if you've ever heard this. You've ever heard the golden rule? Somebody shout out what the golden rule is. Right. Exactly. That actually comes, Jesus said that when he was on the mountain with the disciples. He sat down with them, and when he was coaching them through life, telling them what to do, one of the things he said was very simply, he said, in everything, he actually started it by saying, in everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. Now, as I've said, whether we listen to that or not is entirely up to us, okay? On the one hand, we can choose to listen to that. I'll tell you what I think that would look like. That means, if you're sitting home one night thinking, I wish somebody would call me and invite me out to have fun, you should go to the phone and call somebody and invite them out and have fun. If you're home thinking, I wish somebody would bring me a pork roll, egg and cheese on an everything bagel with salt, pepper, and ketchup, you should go down to Bagel Masters and buy one of those bad boys and bring it to that person. If you think to yourself, I wish people would treat me with respect, find someone to respect. If you think to yourself, I wish people would notice when I'm sad and broken and come over and sit down next to me and ask me how I'm doing, and then listen to me. If you think that, then here's what you should do. Open your eyes and look around and find someone who's sad and go sit down with them and ask them how they're doing. I mean, this is a brilliant and a beautiful thing that Jesus teaches. It's so beautiful. And if it's up to us to decide what to do, well, on the one hand, we can decide to do it, or on the other hand, we can choose not to do that. We can choose instead to look around and always think of ourselves first and not other people. Whenever we want something, we can think to ourselves, how can I get that? What can I do to get what I want? What can I do to take from other people? What can I do to grab everything that the world could possibly give and get it for myself? We can use people for our own needs. That's also within our power. Now, if you choose the first way, always going out and doing things for other people, do you know what might happen? You might do nice things and no one will ever thank you. And nothing will change really for a while, maybe. And on the other hand, if you do the other thing and always try to get things from you, you'll probably find people that you can take advantage of and get some good things from. And for a while, there might not be any sort of downside to that as opposed to the upside of the other. For a long time, in fact, it might be that life goes along and it doesn't look too different for you and the person who is as selfish as anyone else could be. But if there's anything that's true about life, it's this. The weather changes unexpectedly. It's not always sunny. Anyone in here agree with me on that one? That life throws storms at you that you don't expect. I spent some time at Princeton Seminary, and I got the chance to be a teacher for preachers for a little while. Well, I got to listen to sermons and then sort of grade them. And there was this one student who stood up. They were supposed to talk about suffering. They were supposed to preach a sermon about suffering. And he said, "Well, today I'm going to preach a sermon about suffering, and I think this is a good exercise because my life has been easy from day one, and I've never suffered at all. And the truth is, I don't think I ever will. So I think this will be a good exercise in me just to try it out." I gave him an F, and I prayed to God that he would suffer. That's not really true. That's not really true. The weather changes. And yeah, you can choose not to listen to Jesus, and for a while it might not make any difference. But this is the third observation that I want to make about this beautiful image that Jesus tells, because it is a powerful thing that is in the midst of his image. Did you notice that the weather is bad for both houses? Did you notice that Jesus doesn't take his disciples up on a mountain and say, "If you listen to me and if you do the things I tell you, it will always be sunny. It will never rain, you'll never have any challenges, and life will be easy." Listen, there are lots of preachers who make a lot of money telling people that garbage, and it's just not true. In Jesus' image, not only does he say it might happen that rain will fall on the house built on the rock, he says it will. It's a guarantee that storms are going to come, that rain will fall, that the streams will rise and floods will come, and the winds will beat against the house. And I'm sure that if we wanted to, we could spend the next 10 hours where you all shared some of the storms that happened in your life in the past, or the ones that you're going through now, or maybe the ones that you're afraid of in the future. Choosing to listen to Jesus and listen to his words does not mean that storms won't come. It doesn't mean that. But it does mean something else. And what it means is that when they do come, the person who's listened to Jesus, their house is not going to fall down. It's going to stand up. On the other hand, the person who has chosen always not to listen to him, when the storms come, they'll fall to pieces. And I could tell a dozen stories of people that I know who have no relationship with God, who've always chosen to do the thing that benefited them the most, and never had any regard for what God would teach them about how to live, and when a storm comes in their lives, do you know what happens? They fall to pieces. Whereas on the other hand, I know many Christians, I'm very close friends with several Christians, who are in the midst of terrible storms right now, and against all odds and reason, they're not falling to pieces. And I'm confident that it's because they've chosen in the way that they can to listen to Jesus as best they can. And that is the third observation I have from this story. That rain and floods and wind will come whether you follow Jesus or not. The difference is whether your house will stand up when they come. And now one last observation about this story. Just before I share, anybody wonder about what happened after that girl shot the basketball? In the story that Jesus tells, the difference between the houses is where they're built, right? And everybody knows that if you build a house without a foundation, it's going to fall down, right? So when you build a house, the first thing you build is a good foundation. And that means you dig a hole in the ground and you probably get like cinder blocks and pour some cement in there. Is that right? That's what you do. Did you notice something about these men in their house? I want to ask you this and think about it. Were they responsible for building the foundation? Did Jesus say, the one who listens to me is a person who goes and first builds a great foundation and then puts his house on it? Did he say that? And this right here is where Jesus is so utterly different than a life coach. after those girls were told what to do with the ball, and they threw it down the court, and it was intercepted, and it was thrown back, and that girl pulls up and shoots, and it goes in slow motion, it's about to go in. The filmmaker cuts the film, and it goes to black, and the next scene, you know what it is? It's the coach wrestler, in the locker room, the camera's right on his face, and he's like this. Silence in the locker room. He says, high school students are strange. You can tell a high school student to do A, B, and C. They will agree with you that A, B, and C is the right thing to do. They will tell you that they are going to do A, B, and C. And then they do X, Y, and Z. You ask them why they did X, Y, and Z, and they have no answer. I think what he's observed there is true not just for high school students. And the fact is, and no matter how good the coach is, or no matter how good the advice of the coach is, and no matter how hard we set our minds to it, that we are going to do just what the coach tells us, whether it's the life coach or Jesus, if you went home and memorized chapters 5 through 7 tonight, and then every day set them in the morning, and tried your hardest to do them, do you know what is bound to happen to you? You are bound to have the ball underneath the opponent's basket and know the right thing to do and see a person there to pass it to and another person, but you will huck it down court because you think you know better. And do you know who knows that? Jesus knows that. He knew it as he was talking to those disciples that day. It didn't mean he decided not to tell them the right things to do, but Jesus is smart enough to know that all of us throw really bad passes. That we know what A, B, and C are, and we agree that they're the best things to do, but we still screw up and do X, Y, and Z anyway, and if we're asked why, we have no answer. But the thing that's so good about Jesus, which makes him so different than the life coaches, he knows that we don't have an answer, and he doesn't require an answer of us. And here's why. He has decided to take the ill effects of our stupid decisions and make them his own. He knows that we'll throw a bad pass and that the game will be lost, but Jesus has put himself in the game and lost it for us. That's what is at the heart of the gospel. It's not just a message about good news or good advice from Jesus about how to live so that things go well. It is that. It is good advice. And if you do read 5 through 7 and do what he says, your life will begin to change. But your life will never be perfect. You always make mistakes, and the good news of the gospel is that Jesus Christ came down into the world for people who screw up and make mistakes. And when we say and believe that he died on the cross, we know that he did that for our bad passes. The foundation that our houses are meant to be built on to last has been laid down by someone else. And this is why in the New Testament, Jesus is called the foundation, the one upon whom the church is built. Because when Jesus died, he laid down his life, and that rock is there, and we have the opportunity, all of us, to build our houses on that foundation. And what that means is not abstract, it's not about your thoughts or your feelings, it's about the choices you make whether to do the things that you hear Jesus telling you to do. Can you do that? Yes. It is within our ability, all of us, to do so. Let's pray.